episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. Mark's here with you, hanging out in the little screen across from me, because we do this digitally sometimes still. And
that's yeah, that, man.
That's that ball-headed fuck, mate.
Lex Luthor.
Yeah, you do have a Lex Luthor vibe going there, man.
Yeah, man. I've gotten that from a few people. It was like I took a selfie whenever I went to go see the movie we're talking about today, and my cousin in Mexico, he's like, "Oh, you're looking like Lex Luthor," and I was like, "Man, he's like the second or third cousin to tell me that." I was like, "I'll take it." You know what? I'll take Luthor.
If Lex Luthor was half Mexican,
yeah, I know, right? Lex Luthor. You have to put a tilde at the end of the Luthor.
And then sometimes you'd wear a sombrero.
Yes. Señor Superman, I will take you down with my intellect.
Yeah.
Yes. In an alternate universe created by the Flashpoint Paradox, Luther is Hispanic.
And that, you know, there probably is like a Mexican version of that out there somewhere. You know, there's like,
hell yeah, man. Those, man. Yeah, those B movies or C movies really that are out there. I mean, there was what, like some very bad French movies made after the Terminator with some actor that wasn't that great in a leather jacket walking around France.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's like a even more so of a B horror movie type of movie.
And then they aired on like the Sci-Fi Network and
stuff. Yeah.
I remember that. And I'm adjusting volume on this because your mic's come out really loud and I'm afraid I'm going to blast my ears. I hope I turned it the right way.
Oh, yeah.
Technical stuff going on, people. But don't
technical worry. Stuff. Yeah.
Much better now. but yeah, man, it's I don't know. I'm going to be honest. We're recording a little late on Friday and I'm a little on the tired side, but I'm going to make it through this because I'm a man of the people and I'm here for the fans of
a man of the people. It is a showman, baby.
It is my destiny to put on a good show every week, the best I can. And
yes. You know,
but yeah, man. So it's been a pretty good week. You know, I mean, I lost another storm the other night, lost power for a few hours. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's why I'm still a little tired from losing a little sleep that night. But, you know, good old ERCOT here in Texas and their power grids that can't last from just some fucking wind, you know.
Just, for real, man. Just get blown over like a stack of spaghetti noodles.
The storm a couple of weeks ago, that was like bad. You know, it's like a mini fucking hurricane. The storm the other night didn't seem that bad. It's like, and then we lost power. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it makes you wonder sometimes like what they're really doing out there. You know, are they really working for the good people of our great state? Probably not. They don't give a shit.
Yeah, maybe not, man.
That's the way I feel. And or maybe I'm just I've been a little in a salty mood today. I don't know why.
You ever a little get salty?
Like, yeah, it's like sometimes you get like you're not necessarily in a bad mood, but just like
everything's like, irking you, right?
Yes, like, and, yeah. And especially as I get older, like people, man, I'm just like. You know, I'll get to the end of the week and people will say something to me. I just look at them and I'm like, how did you survive this long in life? You know?
Yeah, I know, right?
It's just like, and that's how it's kind of been today, man. People at work were just kind of like irritating me. And someone asked me, I was all right. Yeah. I'm like, yes, I'm fine. Don't, you know, it's just like, sometimes it's just, you get like that.
Yeah, man. And then it's like those,
mean you're in a bad mood or you're anything. You just want to be left alone.
Yeah. Normally you can let those things pass you by, but then like, you know, it's one thing after the other and you've got this whole totality of the circumstances thing. It's not, you know, one little thing here, one little thing there. It's like 5, 6, 7 little things that make it like one big thing. And you're just like on edge the rest of the day.
And then you're a little overtired and you're just like, oh no, but I made it through the day and here we are.
There we go.
Recording a new episode, but man, it was a good week.
Yeah,
I watched some stuff this week, man. I actually had time. I made it through 3 movies this week. Can you believe that? That's a lot.
Nice, man.
So I'm gonna start with the things I watched. The first thing I watched was I had never seen Denis Villeneuve's Arrival with Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner. So I finally sat down and watched it, and you know, as expected from a Denis Villeneuve film, it's extremely well shot, well acted, well atmosphere. But the ending, hey man, The payoff for me was a little, I don't know, anticlimactic. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. It looks epic.
If that's the thing. It's in typical Denis Villeneuve fashion. It has this epic feel to it, kind of like Sicario did or Dune Part One. But then you get to the end and you're like, that's it. So basically what this is, and I know you haven't seen it, but I'm still going to do some spoilers because
it's been out so long. Yeah.
And it's like, so, you know, she's a linguist and she's hired to figure out the alien's language. And, so as the story goes on, the tensions across the globe are intensifying as, you know, people think the aliens aren't there for nice things and want war with them. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that each of the 12 ships is giving a different message to the human race. And, so it's their job to decipher this message, in which basically it becomes a warning for the humans not to use their weapons and destroy each other, because the aliens are going to need our help in 3,000 years when we have technology to help them. But then the other part of it was, as she visits these aliens, Amy Adams' character, and she's great in the movie, they're communicating with her, and she keeps having these flashbacks and dreams and stuff about her daughter that passed away from a horrible disease. But then all of a sudden, at the end, the twist in the movie is they were showing her future, because to them, time is not linear.
Okay.
And so they were showing her what's going to happen if she goes forward with her future, but she chooses to do it anyways. She chooses love over the horrible, even with the horrible facing of death of this child.
Oh, wow.
At the end of the movie. And it's like, I'm like, well, it's kind of depressing, but at the same time, I think the point in it was like, you know, you only live once, you make the most of it, no matter what you have to face.
Yeah.
So it's well acted. I just felt the ending was a little bit anticlimactic. You know, but I'd recommend it. I mean, Denis Villeneuve, man, the dude's got a ton of talent. You know, Blade Runner 2049. And as much as I thought Dune Part One was boring, it was still epic feeling. It's well shot. Prisoners is great. You know, the guy's got tons of talent. And it's just another movie on his list. And so, you know, it's worth the watch. It's a slow burn science fiction film, but if you appreciate well thought out, well done science fiction, then it's worth seeing. And I didn't hate it or anything. I just wanted, I don't know, I was expecting something different from the ending, I guess.
Okay. That's understandable.
The second movie I watched was one that came recommended from our friend of the show, Brett. And he asked me if I'd seen this. And he asked me about 3 weeks ago, and I didn't even respond to him. And I saw it was on Amazon Prime. And that is The Peanut Butter Falcon.
With Shia LaBeouf.
With Shia LaBeouf and
the special needs dude.
Dakota Johnson, who's best known for showing her goods in 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
but man, what a great movie. It's just like, it is so good. You know, it's about this special needs kid played by a guy named, don't know his whole name. His name is Zach in the movie, and that's also his real life name. He's got Down syndrome, and he lives in a home in which he, you know, was put there because his family didn't want anything to do with him, sadly. And all he wants in life is to be a wrestler and to have a family. So he escapes from the home with his roommates, played by the always great Bruce Dern, in a small role. And he escapes, and he meets up with Shia's character of Tyler. Mm-hmm. And Shia's character is also a guy who's just trying to make a living in life and looking for something new after his brother had passed. And he meets Zach, and immediately he never treats Zach like he's got Down syndrome or he's anything more than a person. And at first, you know, Tyler doesn't really want to, you know, much to do with him other than, okay, I'll help you get as far as this wrestling school in Florida and then I'm done. But what turns into a partnership turns into a wonderful friendship and an adventure of a lifetime with these two guys. Nice. And it has a really great ending and just a great moral of the story that your friends are your family you choose, and it doesn't matter what you go through in life, you're still a human being and you're a person. And it's just a really, really well done movie. Shia is great in it. You know, and Shia doesn't always get enough credit for how good he really is as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he made this movie right when some of his troubles were starting. He got arrested in Georgia while filming this movie.
Oh, wow.
That's about for his DWI. That's about when some of his problems started. But he puts on a hell of a good performance in this movie. And really well done film. And there's a couple of neat little wrestling cameos from a couple of famous wrestlers, which are played for low key, but that's the way it should be because the story's not about them.
Yeah.
But it's really, really good movie. And I thank Brett for telling me to watch it because it definitely hit home for me too, having an uncle that was special needs. And, you know, so it's a well done movie. Highly recommend watching that if you've never seen it. But yeah, I watched 47 Ronin with Keanu Reeves because I only watched it because you know how Netflix will suggest things to you?
Yeah.
And, it suggested, and I was like, you know, I've never seen this. And it's got a man, the actor who was in John Wick 4 with him, who ran the Osaka
company. Yeah. And he was in Last Samurai.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not great, but it's not bad either. Man, it's entertaining for a couple hours. It has some good good sequences and good action sequences, and it's based on a semi-true story of the 47 Ronin. Obviously there's some mystical stuff in the movie and things they make it to make it a Hollywood film to make it a little more exciting. And but you know, Keanu plays a young boy who's the samurai group finds in the woods, and they take him in as their own, even though at first they say they should kill him because they think he's a demon. But a young girl says, no, don't do that. And she kind of takes care of him, and he's not treated real well. He's referred to as a half breed through this group of samurai. He ends up through a series of events, ends up being respected by the clan, and they go on to fight against it's one of your evil warlord movies. You know, they've got to fight back against the evil warlord and save their life.
It looked like a 300 style movie.
Kind of, you know, it's a little bit, but it's well shot, great costumes, great sets. I think where the problem lies the most in it is the villains are just kind of throwaway, where you feel like if you're going to have this whole battle, epic battle against this tyrant, and the tyrant's just like not very tyrannical. And I looked up the real story, and apparently the history shows that the real story, that the guy was pretty damn evil. And I guess they played that down some in the film to get it to be PG-13. I'm just assuming maybe that's why Hollywood.
That could have been. They think they can reach a bigger audience by dropping the rating, you know. Right.
But it was good. I mean, not Keanu's best, obviously, or anything, but a good movie, you know, for a quick watch in an afternoon or something. And, it was fine. But the best of those three, if I had to recommend, I mean, I think if you're into good science fiction, watch Rival. But the Peanut Butter Falcon, just a great movie. Definitely worth watching.
Nice. You
know, that's really what the three I watched this week. I was trying to get to Extraction, too. I did watch the first episode of Arnold's documentary.
Oh, nice.
It's good, but it's just a lot of Arnold talking and telling stories. Some of the behind the scenes footage is mockumentary style, where it's like actors playing Arnold, and it's just kind of like,
just not that great.
It's not great, but it's not bad. It's interesting, but I was hoping for a lot more archival footage than what's in it. You know, maybe it'll get better with parts two and three, but if you're an Arnold fan, you got to watch it. You know.
Yeah, I completely forgot about it. I got sidetracked with the. Marvel releasing Secret Invasion.
I need to watch that and Extraction too.
Yeah, so I did watch that. I did watch Secret Invasion, and I liked it. I don't think it's at the same level of like Winter Soldier espionage, but it's definitely solid. I was interested a bit. You know, I do want to see. Yeah, the next phase of Marvel and where they kind of go with this, and how they set up Secret Wars using the Skrulls and stuff. So, they've got I forget her. I can't remember her name. She played Sarah Connor in Genesis, and then she was Queen of Dragons.
Oh, Emilia Clarke.
Emilia Clarke. Yep. I was like, man, why can't I think of her name right now? I drew a blank.
She's in it? I don't even know she's in it.
Yeah, she's in it. She's, you know, for what she's asked to do, she does a good job. One thing I don't like, you know, because you see on Spider-Man Far From Home that in the post credits that Fury is like up on a spaceship and he hasn't really been, you know, doing his job. And I guess they try and make this notion that, oh, you're not ready for this threat because you've been up there. And I'm like, he's Nick Fury, dude. He can take some time off, come back and kick ass. You know, I'm like, I don't like you downplaying the character of Nick Fury. So I'm like, right. Well, what's the purpose of that? So that's the only thing I'll kind of say about it. Definitely go ahead and watch it. It's worth a watch.
Yeah. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
I heard there's kind of a big twist at the end of the first episode.
Yes, there is. Yeah. There is a twist. So, and that's interesting because I got thrown through a loop. Definitely check it out. Especially with the first episode having a twist, it makes you, it sets the level that, you know, nothing, no death is off the table. I'll say that.
And they bring the great Ben Mendelsohn is back playing one of the Skrulls, which that dude's always good on screen.
Yeah. I like him. He's good in the film as well. He's doing his thing. He's always consistent. I feel like he always brings a good performance, whether it's Ready Player One or Rogue One.
He's a good actor. I like him.
I thought I had seen Howl's Moving Castle, but I know I didn't. I hadn't seen Howl's Moving Castle, so I watched it and I like it. And I watched the dubbed version with Christian Bale as Howl, and I think it's a really good Studio Ghibli film. It's become one of my favorite anime so far. Good. Yeah.
It's a good one. It's Miyazaki. It's one of his films that he directed.
So yeah. Yeah. You can't go wrong with that. 2004's Howl's Moving Castle, yep. the year right before Spirited Away.
Well, no, it came after Spirited Away.
Oh, after Spirited Away. Yeah.
And I think that's what Howl's, people felt that Howl's had a lot to live up to because Spirited Away was so widely received. But and Howl's kind of went under the radar because of that. But Howl's Moving Castle was really good too. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And then of course I always have to see what Peacock is streaming. And there was a movie that I saw kind of like in the same vein as Renfield, where it's like I thought it would be an entertaining movie, but not necessarily like a trip to the theater. So it came out on streaming on Peacock, and it's called Polite Society. It's about an Indian girl and her sister, her family, and she wants to be a stunt woman. So she practices martial arts. She's big into martial arts, and she's basically trying to stop her sister from getting married. Because she's, you know, she has a dream to be an artist, and, you know, she doesn't want her quitting on her dreams, but it ends up, you know, turning into a sci-fi twist and fairly entertaining. I think the martial arts is decent in the film. I thought it was going to be a little bit better. But it's an entertaining film. I'll give it that. I give it, you know, 3 out of 5 stars. I was using Letterboxd this week because I see a lot of people have that Letterboxd app. So I was trying to use it to rank films. And I was like, I'm going to give it 3 out of 5.
I tried. I've set up a Letterboxd account a couple of times. Then the app does something or pisses me off and annoys me and I stop.
Sometimes I can't figure out.
Really user-friendly. Yeah.
Yeah. Like how to add things to my list and, you know, it takes me a while to navigate that sometimes. Yeah. So I know what you mean. But I did check that out. And think that's about it.
Yeah. No, I'm going to try to keep on rolling. You know, summertime, I have a little more time to watch stuff. Cause, you know, I'm not picking up kids, not running to baseball.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm going to try to get Extraction 2 watched this week, and I'll definitely get Secret Invasion first episode watched. I kind of just forgot that came out, and then I saw something like, oh, Secret Invasion's out. Like, I need to watch it.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of people on my feed talking about it, and I was like, oh, yeah.
I probably would watch it today, but I ended up doing the second job for about an hour and a half today, so I was like, by the time I got home, I was like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm tired.
But, yeah, it's okay, man. I was trying to think if I watched anything else, but no. I'm actually a little shocked you had not watched the first episode of the Arnold documentary, as big of a fan as you are. But
I had forgotten about it.
I know you'll get to it. There's not a whole lot of news, so we're going to go through this. There's only a couple things. We're going to go through this really quick because we got a lot to talk about in this feature film today. We got our first look at Sony's Kraven movie with the trailer, and I'm sorry, but it just did not look good to me.
Yeah, it doesn't look enticing.
I like Aaron Taylor Johnson, but I just don't think he's quite a big enough star. And villains, just as a movie, unless you're Venom, who's extremely popular, maybe a Magneto movie could work. There's very few villains that I think are on that level that can make a movie work. The Joker, but even though I didn't like the Joker movie, I could still see why it worked because he's a powerful villain.
Yeah.
But Kraven just, he's a second him villain. He needs to be done as a,
yes.
If I'm making a Spider-Man movie, I'm not even going to make him the main villain. I'm going to have him team up with somebody, you know? I don't know.
I completely agree. Sergey the Hunter, AKA Kraven the Hunter. He was prominent in the comics. He's, you know, of course, part of the Sinister Six, in some versions, but to your point, he's a side villain. He's one of those guys that just, you can basically introduce by him randomly showing up and they're like, who's this guy? And he's like, blood of the tiger entered my blood.
I mean,
the hunt flows through me.
Then they throw the little rhino teaser at the end of the trailer.
Yeah. But
I mean, if you're a comic book fan or even a casual fan and you're naming Spider-Man villains, I mean, you're going to name off the Green Goblin, Scorpion, Venom, Carnage, Dr. Octopus, Black Cat.
Mysterio.
Mysterio, you name it.
Dude, Black Cat could fucking work.
Oh, I've been wanting Black Cat to appear in a film forever.
Felicia Hardy.
There's two things I would love to see in a Spider-Man film. Is a properly, we've had Felicia Hardy in the movies, but she's never become Black Cat. Is Black Cat.
Yeah.
And a Mary Jane Watson that is like the comics. Spunky, sexy, fun, and not a damsel in distress.
Yes. And Kirsten was too much of a damsel.
Yes. And I want to see... We talked about John Romita Sr. last week and his passing. I want to see the Mary Jane that he created.
Yeah.
You know, still on screen. And Zendaya, who's a version of MJ in this universe, you know, whatever, because they name her MJ. She's great. Don't get me wrong. She has that spunk to her for sure.
Yeah, definitely has the spunk.
But I just want that comic version. And then the same with Black Cat, Felicia Hardy. I want that sexy, sassy, spunky Black Cat that's in
the introduce her by starting off with her dad, the Cat. Who tried to steal the superhero serum.
But instead, Sony wants to make Kraven movies. And why? A couple of quick notes and news. Word is that we might have some news on the casting for Superman Legacy as early as next week. That Warner Brothers has been... I don't know if this means we're going to get the lead actor or what, but I have a feeling it's going to be more subparts. Because, I mean, this film is supposed to go possibly behind the cameras as early as... This fall. So, you know, casting's got to start soon, even though some word is that it's been pushed back to January to start filming because of the writer's strike and all that solidarity stuff. But I guess they're preparing for if the writer's strike ends, that maybe it still starts filming on time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of crazy to think that we could be having a new Batman film and a new Superman film at the same time. And they're from different universes.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
We have the Batman Part 2 and then Superman Legacy. being filmed. So we'll see what happens with that. A last bit of note is that a press release type thing or notes of information we're going around Disney Lucasfilm shows that Rey's Star Wars movie, it's going to be 2026 is the rumored year. That's
2026
out. And apparently a lot of people weren't sure what the first of the new Star Wars movies is going to hit theaters. And apparently it is the Rey movie. So that means we might have three more years for after Star Wars movie in theaters. Maybe that's good. Give it a break. Maybe it's not. You know, we'll see.
Yeah, man.
Give the fan base time to calm down.
Yeah, and then, you know, release a sequel character-led movie and see how it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
You know, I mean, even though James Mangold has talked that now he's done with Indiana Jones, I think he's got one project he's doing before he starts his Star Wars movie, so... We'll see as we get closer. But that's really all the news, man. I was like sifting through the news this week, and I'm like, that's really all that happened, or just wasn't a lot?
I saw IGN reported that Linda Hamilton's going to join the cast of Stranger Things this coming up season.
Yeah, not a whole lot of outlets picked that up, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. IGN reported it. It wasn't like comicbook.com. So yeah, I was like, oh, cool. Linda Hamilton, man. In a sci-fi franchise again. I was like, I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I guess. You ever think about though with her, like, how come she never really did much beyond Terminator? Makes you wonder sometimes.
She killed that role. She killed that role. I think she could have made it as an action star, like a female action star. I think it suits her well. But yeah, it's like, I don't remember. I can't name anything else outside of the Terminator films. Right. You know, with her in it. So, yeah, but I think she's gifted for what she has been asked to do with those films. So she's like this tough chick, you know, I think she could knock that out, you know, and she could be really good for the franchise.
So man, this week we decided to do our feature film as a movie currently in theaters. Perhaps maybe this backfired on us a little bit since the movie wasn't as big at the box office as they were expected to be. But you know what? I don't really care because I enjoyed the hell out of the movie.
And same so here.
We're discussing the brand new movie that's in theaters now, The Flash, starring Ezra Miller as The Flash. And, of course, Ben Affleck as Batman and Michael Keaton as Batman. And along with a cast of other characters, Sasha Kelly as a Supergirl. And Michael Shannon comes back to play Zod. And, you know, this movie, just going to prepare you now. We're going to go into spoiler mode on this. I know it's only been theaters a week, but I think the hardcores that wanted to see it went and saw it opening weekend. And that's where we're going to go full spoiler territory in this. So they chose to go the route of telling a modified version of the Flashpoint story with this movie where Barry Allen decides to, go back and, use the Speed Force to go through time to try to keep his mom from dying. In this version though, he goes back and he meets up with his other self in a different world, but he doesn't really realize yet that he's quite on a different earth. It takes him a little bit to get there. So instead of going through time, he goes to a completely different earth in this version, which is a little different because I remember the original Flashpoint version, he goes through time, but it's still his earth. Mm-hmm. He just changes history, where Thomas Wayne becomes Batman instead of Bruce Wayne. So in this version, he just goes to a different earth in which Michael Keaton's Batman still exists from 1989. And Superman never came to the planet. In fact, they sent his cousin, Kara, to watch over
Kara-Zor-El.
The planet and to protect a young Kal-El. But the young Kal-El never made it to Earth because he was in this version, he was intercepted by Zod and Zod and them, did experiments on him, and Kal-El never survived. So this version of Earth has Kara instead, and she's the Supergirl. And the military has her locked up in a facility because they, you know, she's an alien, basically. Which makes for one of the
Red
coolest
Sun
sequences.
Facility.
Yeah, which is one of the coolest sequences of the movie. So basically, Flash, he gets to this alternate universe, and he has to figure out now, like, okay, well, how do I get back? Even though he realizes his mom is alive in this world and he kind of likes this world. But he knows what date is, the same date in which he got his powers in his world. So he believes that the Barry Allen of this world has to get his powers that day too. But it's not going the way he plans. So he sets up this experiment to get Barry struck by lightning, but it backfires him. So this is part, like in Flashpoint, he loses his powers. So the Barry from our Earth or the original Earth loses his powers in this version. So it's a little bit convoluted there. So then they need more metahumans. And turns out that none of them really exist in this world except for Batman. I did think it was funny how they figure out that Batman exists in this world through a series of Barry Stoner roommates, you know, like, Batman exists. I was like, that's pretty funny. Batman. I mean, they would be the people who would believe in something like that. So they go to Wayne Manor and they find it worn down and torn up and not taken care of. And they find a old kind of a little bit batshit crazy Bruce Wayne with long hair on the grounds. And they have he kicks their ass for a minute and then basically decides to talk to him and says, okay, I'll help y'all, you know, after to go rescue, find this Supergirl. And because Zod has showed up on Earth at this point, because in this version of the timeline, mm-hmm. Zod still shows up. There's new Superman to stop him. So this is all bad news. So not only does Barry lose his powers, Zod shows up. He has to help him to fight Zod. They also do a little retconning where we find out in front of flashback story that Barry was at the original Zod invasion, but he didn't quite have his fully developed powers and suit yet, which I thought was kind of cool how they retconned that, that Barry was there.
Yeah.
You know, is it tied everything together? So basically through a series, Batman goes and they help help them rescue Supergirl, and which where we get a really cool sequence where we see her powers come to light as she gets back out in the sun and from her weakened state, and she gets to kick some ass. We get a really cool one thing I liked about this movie a lot was in the eight, you know, you go back, you watch the 89, 92 Batman, Batman Returns, and you never quite get those modern day action sequences with Michael Keaton's Batman like you do in the Dark Knight trilogy or Robert Pattinson's Batman film. And we got that in this. We finally got to see Michael Keaton's Batman truly kick some ass. And that's what I walked away from enjoying the most. You know, it was like, wow, I got to see 89 Batman be Batman.
I wonder if they use the same stuntman from Batman versus Superman, you know, from the warehouse scene. Cause that, yeah, it could have been, man. It looked, that was a really good scene.
Oh, and I kind of just completely skipped over Affleck's Batman's really only in the beginning of the movie as there's this wild sequence where he calls Barry and asks Barry to help him rescue people at the hospital while Batman's chasing down these other bad guys that caused the damage to the hospital. And it's mm-hmm. this whole wild sequence is where we get to see the Flash's powers in action. I mean, the whole sequence is really just there to introduce Barry to moviegoers and to give Batman something to do. And mm-hmm. when Barry tells Batman, I'm going to go back in time, Batman warns him, says, you can't do that. It's a bad idea. But you know, you really think about it, the whole sequence is rather pointless overall, but it makes for a cool, expensive action scene.
Yeah.
You know, but it has nothing to do with the meat of the film. I guess it was also to show that, you know, we have our Batman with Ben Affleck's Batman and to prelude to getting Michael Keaton's Batman. So, you know, and so they rescue Supergirl, of course, and she at first isn't sure she wants to help him because she's not sure if humanity is really worth saving because mm-hmm. she's kind of pissed off. And then she goes and decides, no, I'm going to help you. You know,
yeah.
So they attack Zod, and then this is where the movie gets really nuts. I don't even know how to describe the last 30 minutes where the Barry from this world that, Supergirl does help the original Barry get his powers back. She takes him up and he gets struck by lightning and gets mm-hmm. his powers back in Speed Force. And I wish there was maybe a little bit more explanation of that. Cause does that mean Supergirl could take anyone up in the sky and they're just going to get their Speed Force? You know?
Well, he was splashed with the chemicals.
Right.
And just like in Flashpoint, he's hit by lightning once and it doesn't work. And then she shows up when he's like fucking toasted, you know, he's a, right. crispy, and he's like, again, strike me again, and she comes in, you know, why did you save me? And he's like, because you needed it,
right?
And she's like, and raises him up into the lightning storm, and he becomes the Flash again.
So yeah, so there's two Flashes, and then the younger Flash from this new world is kind of gets overly obsessed with saving his mom. We also witness the death of Batman. He gets obsessed with saving Batman and Supergirl because Zod keeps killing Supergirl, and he keeps going back in time to the point that he kind of becomes a villain at the film of the film at the end and becomes Dark Flash. And Barry basically has to stop him and reset everything on his own.
Yeah.
By realizing like he made a mistake going back through time and he has a wonderful, and I'm skipping some things on purpose. You know, he has a wonderful, touching moment with his mom in the grocery store, and he gets to talk to her one more time. And Barry resets things and goes back to his world, even though it's not quite reset the way he thought it was.
Yeah.
And there's a reason I skipped over some stuff because I wanted to get in the meat of this film and stuff. And there's things we'll talk about. First off, I really hope that if James Gunn does one thing in his new DCU, bring Sasha Calle back. She's incredible. There's not enough of her. There's like
no, there isn't.
There's this energy about her that just spews energy on screen, and she was fantastic in the part she had, and I hope that she's able to be brought back for her role because she was good. It was wonderful seeing Michael Keaton back in the role. If I had one beef, there was no Batmobile scene. I was like, come on, man.
Yeah, there was.
Well, it's in the movie. He never drives it.
He never drives it, but they're like, oh my God, the Batmobile.
That's what I'm saying, man. They never drove the Batmobile. It's like, you know, but we got a lot of Batwing action in school.
Yeah, we did get a lot of Batwing.
Ezra Miller, despite his public problems he's had, he's fantastic in the movie, playing dual roles.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a huge fan of how he played the second Barry. He was a little almost just too dumb and kind of silly. But to Ezra Miller's credit, he's great on both sides. I mean, he's really, really good in the movie.
Yeah, he can flip that switch pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I apologize because I know you're not supposed to call him a guy because he goes by pronouns, but all that shit confuses me. So we're going to call him
a guy. Yeah, just call him Ezra. Yeah.
And he's a talent for sure. You know, I mean, he really is, and he shows it. And that's why I've told people that didn't like his version of Barry Allen, the Justice League. And I'm like, well, have you ever seen the Zack Snyder's version? Oh, no, I haven't seen it. Watch the Zack Snyder's version. He's given more to do. You can see that he had talent. He's not given anything to do in the theatrical version, but he's given stuff to do in the Snyder cut. And he's given a lot to do in this movie.
And the scenes that nod to that he goes through in the Chronosphere, they're the scenes from the Snyder cut of Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even paying homage to the Whedon cut. Right. So it is only paying homage to the Snyder cut.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get more to the Chronosphere stuff in a second, because that's where some of the wild stuff that happens. I've been talking. What were some of your takeaways from The Flash? I mean,
I'm with you on the Batman sequences. We get a modern action sequence, and it's badass. He's coming in so I can kick in people's asses at 71, which is what you would expect from an older Batman, having seen, you know, Batman Beyond. Mm-hmm. And The Dark Knight Returns, you know he can still get it. And then his quotes, you know, he says, I'm Batman again, you know, and it's just, you know, brings back all kinds of nostalgia.
I thought the We Get Nuts quote was a little silly, but the I'm Batman was awesome. Yeah.
It's silly, but you know, he kept it kind of tame to where it wasn't too ridiculous.
Yeah.
He's like, let's get nuts. Yeah. And then I'm with you on Sasha. I feel like, you know, she did what she was asked to do. She did it well, but there's not enough of her. And then Michael Shannon, him coming back, he's good, just as good as he was in Man of Steel with Zod.
Yeah.
He's a very horrible, horrible person, and he brings that back again in this film.
He's such a good actor. Michael Shannon really is. And everything he's in, he owns it, man. The guy's good.
And then, of course, the relationship that, you know, Flash has with his mom. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, that's done pretty well. Yeah. And the dialogue that he has with her, that's a bright spot in the movie. So those are probably the biggest takeaways for me. And just the nostalgia of everything that we're about to talk about.
Right. And people, you know, complain that the Reverse Flash wasn't the villain or not revealed to be the person who killed his mother, like in the Flashpoint story. But I was fine with that because the story's been told a lot. I was kind of okay with the dual Barrys deciding their fate and whether they did the right thing or not. I was kind of okay with that. I didn't need a Reverse Flash story. I think overall, before we get to some of the wildness, I just found this movie to be it's fast paced. I found it to be, you know, someone said, well, you don't care about Barry Allen because you haven't been on the journey with him yet. But, you know, at this point, a lot of people know the origins of these characters, and we didn't need another origin story. And I thought that Barry's journey was just fine. I thought the movie had an epic feel to it. It had a heart to it. Also had just enough humor where some of the last few Marvel movies, the humor has just gotten stupid. I never felt like The Flash was stupid. You know, it had just enough humor in it. It's good performances. A lot's been said about the CGI in the last couple of weeks, and there is some CGI that's a little questionable, but not enough that it bothered me in the movie or anything. There is one scene where Sasha is in the Chronosphere and her cape is kind of moving, and it does look a little cartoonish, but that's probably the only scene that really stood out to me badly.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so much going on in that Chronosphere scene that maybe I didn't pick up on all of it. The Chronosphere scene is also where we get a lot of the cameos. There's a lot's been said about these cameos in this movie, and this is where there's some heavy duty spoilage. First off, you know, there were rumors months ago about the Nick Cage cameo, and it was, I was like, why would they do that? It seems silly. And I still feel that way about it. There is a Nick Cage cameo in this where he plays Superman. He's fighting a giant spider, which is taken directly from Kevin Smith's early draft of Superman Lives. Superman Lives never happened. It was going to be filmed in 1999 by Tim Burton. He was going to have Nicolas Cage. If you want to go do a YouTube search, there's lots of YouTube videos of Nick Cage trying on the costume.
And there's an interview of him talking about the movie and what it's going to be about.
With the long hair.
Yeah.
There's a documentary out there called What Happened to Superman Lives, which is kind of hard to track down, but it is out there. And so hardcore fans know this. Casual fans don't. And that's where my problem with the cameo is. It's like, why? It really doesn't make sense in the context of the film. Like, why would you put Nick Cage in there? I had a friend ask me, like, why was Nick Cage in? I explained to him. I was like, because he didn't know. And that is the problem. And two, why did they use a CGI Cage when Cage is still alive? You couldn't call, because Cage is a huge fan. I guarantee if you called
it. It was an afterthought.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I would show up for a day and filmed it. So I just feel like you could have used Henry Cavill in that appearance. You know, you could have used.
Well, they had already used Cavill's appearance in the film, sort of. Yeah, the volcano.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, so it just felt like that's the only cameo felt a little out of place. The other cameo, I'm going to talk about the out of place cameos first. The other out of place cameo is a cameo of Jay Garrick, the original Flash, played by Teddy Sears, who in the television show. Teddy Sears did not film his cameo either. They used archive footage from the Flash TV show for it. And why not Grant Gustin? I mean, you know, the guy played Flash for 10 years on the TV show. Why not give him his due and let him make a cameo? That was another year. I'm like, we get Jay Garrick over Grant Gustin? So that was Now, the cameos that did make sense were seeing George Reeves, the original Superman from the TV show.
Yes. And then,
Christopher Reeve, which was awesome to see him in there as Superman. Which, why did they give them like a blue hologram hole though? That was kind of weird. I know it's supposed to be like during the Chronosphere, but like it was a little strange. Helen Slater, who played Supergirl in the terrible Supergirl movie, but you know she got her due, which is cool. And then the one that I did not expect, because you know I think going into it I kind of maybe expected like Christopher Reeve and some of those, but I did not know they'd pull off Adam West, and that was awesome.
Yeah, that was cool.
And they actually used they used archival footage I read for Christopher Reeve, but they used a deepfake tech for the Batman footage for Adam West because they were saying the 1960s TV show, when they tried to transpose it, it just didn't look right. So they had to use kind of a CGI deepfake for the Adam West. And that was cool. What'd you think about the cameos?
I liked them. I thought it was great that there's like a big nod to what could have been with Nick Cage. And there's, you know, it gives Kevin Smith's story a little bit more oomph, you know, a bigger place in pop culture history now. I think it's going to bring a lot more attention to, you know, his story about going to the executives when he first read the script. And he's like, oh, it's like someone hired their cousin, you know, and to write this script. And how that person ended up putting a giant spider in Wild Wild West. So that whole interview is now like canonized, which is pretty cool. I like that Reeves is in it. I think that's great because I think everyone, considers Reeve as their first Superman is, you know, has a soft spot for him, in that suit. And that was just cool to see his likeness.
Oh yeah.
In the film.
Yeah.
The Flash, with Sears, it's okay. But I think it would have made more sense, like you said, to have Grant Gustin, or take your,
or even John Wesley Shipp from the TV show.
Yeah. John Wesley Shipp. Yeah. I could have had him in there. That would have made more sense. Or if you put like just another version of Ezra Miller, in that suit running around, you know, yeah, whatever. But yeah, I mean, I feel like you could have done a little bit different with that. I like that the Adam West happened. And Yeah, I Supergirl, you know, I could have done without, but it's cool that she got her, you know, little spot there too. But yeah, and I like how the other Barry is just young and dumb, and he's not experienced, and he's like, "Well, we can fix it. We'll just keep going back, And he, you know, he turns like old and stuff, and you know, he created himself, and so you get you still kind of get that it was me, Barry, the whole time. I made you create me, you know. So it kind of like the reverse Flash did in Flashpoint. Without saying those exact same words.
Yeah.
So I think that part is great. You know, I know we'll get to the other cameo.
I think we'll get to the other cameo. The only other thing I think is, I felt like Batman's death could have had a little more weight to it after you bring back Michael Keaton back after 30 years and he dies and it just sort of happens. I felt like that could have used a little more weight. Now Andy Menichetti's, how you say his name, says there is a longer cut of this film, but he prefers theatrical cut. But maybe one day we'll get to see the longer cut. He says there is a lot more Batman scenes, like explanations of why Batman had kind of given up. And he says some of this we'll see on the Blu-ray release, some of the deleted scenes. And there was definitely, they had filmed R-rated cuts with Sasha Calle, where she's gets out of the prison and she's breaking arms on those prisoners and stuff like that.
Oh, badass.
Out there of that. And that puts more weight on Barry's explanation to her, like why humans, you know, you have to, you know, treat them right, because she's just kind of killing them. And so, you know, maybe we'll get some of that eventually. Now, there's been lots been made about the ending of the film. When Barry is done and goes back through time and goes home, apparently three different endings were shot. One where we were going to have Henry Cavill, Gal Gadot, and even Jason Momoa all be on the court steps with Barry at the end of the film.
Yeah.
While he was released from prison. And this version apparently would have appeared if the DCEU was still continuing. And we did get a Gal Gadot cameo early in the movie. We forgot to talk about that.
Yeah, we did.
Wonder Woman does.
And that was pretty funny when her lasso of truth was wrapped around Batman's.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
He's like, I dress like this because I'm insecure. And then and I was like, he's like, oh, get this rope off of me.
Yeah. And that was definitely a surprise because no one spoiled that. I didn't no idea Wonder Woman was in the movie.
Yeah.
And so that was cool. You know, so they apparently had cut that. Then there's apparently a second ending where Keaton's Batman is still in that universe and he appears on the court steps, which was more important if the Batgirl movie had came out. They said if the Batgirl movie had still came out, then the Keaton cameo would have stayed. Well, it wouldn't have been a cameo because he was in the movie. But I guess James Gunn, a lot of people are saying that James Gunn came in and he chose the ending that we got where, you know, Barry's waiting for Bruce Wayne to show up and Bruce gets out and it's not Ben Affleck. It's George Clooney, which I laughed. I thought that's brilliant. You know why?
Yes.
The most maligned, worst Batman film that's ever been made.
And he's even apologized for that film.
Clooney is open. He talks about it, he apologizes, and he in good spirits did a cameo because I think Bale would have been too easy, too obvious. You know, I think you could have done Keaton at the end. That would have made sense. Okay, you changed the timeline, but now Keaton's still my Batman. You could have pulled that off. But I think with the DCEU ending and we're moving on to the new DCU, I thought Clooney was fine. Let's have a laugh with this and have some fun. And I thought it was great. I really thought that was funny and ballsy to pull that off, you know. So that was cool. I mean, I am not going to lie. I kind of gave a little clap like, yes, George Clooney, that's great. Because it was so unexpected. I didn't see that coming. I thought, I'm sitting there literally mad. I'm in the theater going, oh, here we go. It's going to be fucking Christian Bale. These motherfucking internet people were right. They all guessed it's Christian Bale, and it's not Bale. It's Clooney.
Well, whenever those leaks came out that it was Clooney, I remember you're like, that doesn't make sense. That's a small, slim chance. And that's like
how they did it.
Yeah.
They did it like that. It was like, okay, you know.
And, yeah. From moving the tomato cans, now fucking Clooney has – is Batman again.
But I thought that was cool, man. I was like, you know what, Clooney, I can deal with that. Because, you know,
give him his dues.
You watch Batman and Robin and it's not Clooney, man. He's, you know, he's given what he's given to work with, you know, and it just had a bad script, had bad dialogue, it was just bad ideas all around.
Yeah. They literally froze Robin so that they could have the city frozen at the end, and Batman could, you know, because Freeze says, you have 11 minutes to unfreeze him. And then so they freeze the city, and Batman's like, we have less than 11 minutes to unfreeze the city. And I was like, they only froze Robin so that they could bring the time frame up at the end.
I know.
I was like.
And the movie's so bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, at least people understood they were in a bad movie, because everyone kind of hams it up in that movie.
Yeah.
But The Flash, man, I think it just, again, watching this still makes me a little sad, a little upset that we're moving on from the DCEU, because I think it had a lot of great ideas. Sometimes the DCEU wasn't always executed correctly. But mm-hmm. I've said this before, I think it could have been saved. But
definitely.
The people at Warner Brothers think differently than we do, and they're the ones who sign paychecks and make money. So we're going to move on to James Gunn's new DCU with starting with Blue Beetle, since he's technically the first character in the DCU. I don't understand that. He's the first character in DCU, but the first official movie is Superman Legacy. It's weird.
Yeah.
But Blue Beetle's a movie. And then where does Aquaman fit in all this? I was actually a little shocked we didn't get an Aquaman trailer in front of The Flash, considering the movie comes out in 6 months. And then we had a cool cameo from Jason Momoa's Aquaman, though, in the post-credit scene.
That was pretty funny.
Barry takes him out. He's drunk. That was kind of funny. And my son, Wyatt, was like, what was the point, Dad? I'm like, nothing. It was just a funny scene. But the adults got the joke, you know. But overall, man, I enjoyed The Flash. I'm definitely will watch again. I'll buy a copy of it when it comes out. I mean, I liked it. I'm not going to be as harsh on it as some people have been. I enjoyed it and thought it was a good, fun movie.
Good, man. Yeah, I can't argue. You know, it's felt like the comedy was good. It wasn't too much. I don't think it was too stupid. The action, I think you had just enough action in there. And of course, you had enough nostalgia to go around. I'm kind of surprised that it's doing as poorly as it is. It hasn't broke even yet. So I'm a little saddened by that, because I was hoping.
I really thought Keaton's nostalgic would bring more people in. Yeah,
for real, man.
I guess there is a public backlash some against Ezra Miller, you know.
Maybe so.
And and I legit laughed at the scene where he is running around the museum or the whatever they were, and he's hoping he gets his powers back. He runs right into the wall.
Yes.
that was funny, you know.
And he's like, oh, I'm slow.
Yeah. There was some legit funny humor, and Ezra sells that. He really does. And you know, it's a shame that he's had the legal troubles he had, and it might have affected this movie, because he's good in it and the movie is good. So, you know, if you're on the fence about The Flash, I'd say go see it. You'll enjoy it.
Yeah, dude, go see it. You know, enjoy it. I think it's worth seeing for sure. I think it's worth owning too.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to wait and see when those pre-orders come out. I'm going to order it.
Yeah. No, it's definitely worth seeing. All right. Well, man, next week we are, Tom Cruise, his birthday is, it's kind of been a running joke for a couple of years now about when Tom's birthday comes around, we either do one of his films. We've done it. Like, we did the original Top Gun one year.
His
birthday. We've done, you know, we've always mentioned
Minority Report.
So this year we're going to do a Tom Cruise movie. His birthday is July 3rd. So it's coming in a couple of weeks, but, we're going to do the Tom Cruise movie next week before his birthday. Because in a couple of weeks we are going to cover Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. So we're going to be doing two featured films that are currently in theaters here in a couple of weeks after doing The Flash today. Nice. So next week we are going to celebrate Tom Cruise and Tom Cruise's birthday, as we're going to discuss Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
An hour ago, a bomb blew up the Kremlin. The president has initiated Ghost Protocol. The entire IMF has been disavowed. Now I've been ordered to take you to Washington, where they will hang the Kremlin bombing on you and your team, unless you were to escape after assaulting Brandt and me. But if any one of your team is caught, they will be branded terrorists out to incite global nuclear war.
What happens now?
Your mission, should you choose to accept it,
so what's the play? are you really, Brandt?
We all have our secrets. Don't we, Ethan?
Okay, now remember, blue is glue.
And when it's red?
Dead.
You're not gonna make it!
You're not helping.
This is the fourth entry in the franchise, and the first that brought in Christopher McQuarrie as a writer, even though Brad Bird directs this one, I believe, yeah. If I remember correctly, it's Brad Bird's live-action debut, and it's a good movie. This is kind of where the series franchise really starts taking off. 4, 5, and 6 are all amazing. So we're going to discuss Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol next week on the show in celebration of Tom Cruise's upcoming birthday. And have some fun with that. And I'm thinking about throwing together the top 5 Tom Cruise running scenes in movies. And we're going to have some fun with this. And
that would be fun.
We'll text back and forth this week and discuss that a little bit.
Yeah, man.
But that is going to be next week on the show. All those movies are on Paramount Plus if you want to watch along with us. Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol next week on the show. But until then, man, we thank you as always for listening to the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. And we're on all the apps, of course, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, anything you want to listen to us on. You can find us even on YouTube, as your friend at your kid's birthday party a couple weeks ago was asking us how to find the show on YouTube. So all good. So we're easy to find the Rebel Radio Podcast.
Yes, sir.
But until next week, continue to be safe as always. We thank you for listening. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
I almost said this has been Matt. I was reading your name on the screen there. But no, I'm definitely Mark. Two M's.
Two M's.
Until next week, remember as always, just go there
and do it.